What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Tribe of Millionaires podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Gruber, and today's guest, Thomas Fanner, has founded a movement, Dads Who Lead. Not only does he host events, not only does he have a podcast by the same name, but he has a book coming out early 2024 called Dads Who Lead, and I've known Thomas for a little bit now, and it's really, really exciting to have him on. He's an Emerge member, GoBundance Emerge member, and he's doing big things. So Thomas, man, thanks for coming on. Tribe listeners, I have an extremely exciting announcement for all of you. Do you want to come hang out with Cody Sanchez, David Osborne, David Green, Rich Roll, and even yours truly down in Austin, Texas? Well, let's do it. May 1st, 2nd, and 3rd, for the first time ever, GoBundance, the exclusive millionaire membership group, is opening up an event to anyone, man, woman, millionaire or not, and we're calling it the Austin Entrepreneurial Summit. At the AES, you'll meet all those people I mentioned, plus GoBundance members on both the men's and women's side, and I'll be there hanging out the entire time. Every event I've ever attended for GoBundance has given me a disproportionate return on the money spent and the time spent to get there. And this is the biggest one that GoBundance has ever done. So if you're a member, not a member, and you're looking to supercharge the second part of your year 2024, this event in May is a great way to get that all kickstarted. Go to GoBundance.com/AES right now for early bird pricing for members and guests. And warning, the power of GoBundance events is that it holds you accountable long after you're gone to achieving whatever goals you've set. So this event will change your life. GoBundance.com/AES. I'll see you there. Let's get back to the show.
Thank you for having Jamie. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, man. I love what's with the bow in the background. Is that home defense?
Oh yeah. 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 So it's a quick draw. Makes it no. I just, as I started this thing, a lot of like, when I coach men, a lot of counseling offices have a lot of feminine energy. And I like men when I get on calls with them or they see the podcast and we're working on some deep work, some deep shit. Like, okay, I feel like I'm in a man's space. I feel like I'm here and I'm digging deep, but it's not let's talk about my feelings. It's about, hey, we're doing this so we can take action.
There's a lot of aspects of a man. There's the protector, the provider, the husband, the father, all of this stuff. Why did you choose, or why are you so passionately drawn to dads?
Well, I became a dad when I was 18. It's a great question. I became a dad when I was 18, and from the jump, it was something that pushed me to the next level. Okay, now I gotta turn it up a notch. I need to get a job. I need to start providing. I didn't know. I had so many question marks. I didn't have a strong relationship with Charles' mom. As it turned out, it was not a match. So that process of fighting to be in his life, and I haven't shared this very many times, but once Charles was born, I actually had to seek legal counsel and fight to be able to spend time with him, be involved in his life, and show that I was providing even before he was born to be able to step into that father role. And so it was a lot of times it felt like an earned opportunity for me. And if you're listening to this podcast, you know, when you earn something, it just makes you want to pour into it that much more. And the reason that I help dads is not because I'm this amazing dad. It's actually because I crashed and burned really hard when Charles was in eighth grade. So if you'd like, I can drop into that story.
Yeah, keep going.
So Charles was living with me for about 9 months after his mom moved 3 hours away. Previously, it had been 50-50 time. And things were going pretty well. He was working. He was on the flag football team that I coached. So we were spending time together there. And we hit an icy patch literally during the cold December month and into January. And he started to feel like, oh, dad, you're telling me when to go to bed. You're telling me when I can have my phone. You're telling me what schoolwork I need to do. I feel boxed in. I feel trapped. I'm out. I want to move in with my mom. I like Eugene, but I want nothing to do with you anymore. And so that hit me like a train, Jamie. And I had to look at, okay, my son's not even here. Bedroom is empty. I have to figure out what is it that I can do to change who I am as a leader. So these small interactions that maybe I'll be able to get with him, I can start to rebuild this thing in a way where he's able to lean into my leadership instead of pull away or push away. So I had to really rewrite how I operated as a leader. And going into it, I had to take a lot of ownership because I felt like I was doing a lot of things right. It wasn't because I didn't have effort. I didn't care. I didn't love my son. It was small details, like small adjustments that I needed to make in tonality, how I presented. And was I leading him or was I parenting him? And that's kind of the origin of the book and the origin of the movement is to shift from this mindset of having our kids do the things that we want them to do to leading them to the direction of their own path, to pursue it with their own heart and spirit.
What's a leader versus a parent?
Great question. There's a lot of little details. So I'll drop into a couple. Yeah. When I was parenting, I actually had a coach or a parenting program, and they would have me work on things like, hey, all right, work on this coin jar. And then when he does good things, you like put money into the coin jar so he can see that he's getting a positive behavior cycle. So it was 80%. This is the summary, right? 80% of parenting is focused on the child and 20% is on you. With leading and the dads I work with, we focus 80% on your leadership skills. How are you connecting with your kids? How are you asking them questions? What are the actions that you're taking in your life so that you are a man who's worth following? So that you build that rapport and that credibility and that connection and that respect. And this is a lot of heavy stuff that's I'm dropping into one sentence. But you position yourself so that you have the authority and connection that when there is something that you need from your kids, they do it. And they're more likely to naturally follow you as a leader. Like, oh, okay. For example,
yeah,
my son is now starting wrestling. I never said, hey, Charles, you should wrestle. I just happened to wrestle and compete in jiu-jitsu and go to tournaments. And my wife, his stepmom, is like competing in half marathons and things. So like we're actually an active family, and organically he's at his subconscious level realizing that's what I want to do. I want to try out these things. So, and I've also got to accept that maybe he wouldn't choose that. And if he didn't and he did something else that was still healthy for his body, that's fine too. But it's guiding our kids in their own ship as opposed to putting them on our ship and telling them where to go. The last thing I'll say on this, because it's a great question, it's an important question. When we're parenting or we're even leading within a company, we want to have, like when I coach football, everybody's got the same mission. Everybody wants to win on Sunday, win on Friday night, whatever it is. And whether you're a cornerback or a strength coach or on the medical team, everybody's going in the same direction. Parenting is the exact opposite. As opposed to leading a team in the same direction with the same mission, we have to figure out how do I guide my son or my daughter on their own path and help them find where they're going. That's not what I'm doing, but what is it that they want to do and are they moving towards it? So it's a completely different skill set than leading a company or a team because they're writing their own story.
Was your ex, his mom, leading or parenting? So he wanted to leave you to go back to her. What is it that she offered him that you were not? I understand what you were doing, but what did she offer? Did you learn from that? Like actually she's leading or was it something else?
No, I talk about, I have a podcast called Box Theory. It's short. It's like 10 minutes. I'll give that a link to anybody that wants to go deeper into it. But essentially I think it was more that, you know, people, when we make a change, often we're moving away from something, not towards something. So I think primarily Charles was moving away from me, not towards his mom. But if there was something that she was doing, to be candid, it was, if you want to have your phone all the time, that's fine. If you want to stay up and go to bed when you want, that's fine. If you want to go to school and you're late, like we'll be flexed. It's more like leisurely lifestyle than it is with me. I have a little bit higher standard. I have maybe more than a little bit higher standards. And it takes some time. It's taken some time for Charles to appreciate those standards, but now he's coming around and he's now setting those for himself.
I assume that was the answer. So perfect. You set up the question for me perfectly. I assume that was the case, that it was sort of a vacuum. There wasn't like great leadership there. And in your case, you were parenting, not leading, and now you've taught yourself some skills, and we'll get into that.
Yeah.
But what is it that you think? What was the moment or the time or the tipping point at which you feel like you re-enrolled him and wanted to be around you as a leader versus a parent?
Oh. Number one, I got coaching. That was my coach, Mike Ligori. He helped me work through and understand myself and understand a lot of different dynamics and how to connect. So like the dads who lead pyramid, which I can summarize, but like, I'm not going to do it justice trying to teach you it all in 45 minutes. But if you think of a pyramid with four layers, the base layer is ownership over our results. And often as men, we first, you know, when we're in high school, we take ownership over our physique. We take ownership over our body and fitness, and we kick ass there. And then we get into our 20s, we take ownership over our finances. But now I had to take it to the next level of I'm taking ownership over the results in my relationships. So if it doesn't go well, it's on me. Mm-hmm. I've got to figure out what do I need to do to change the outcome that I'm getting, which is a lot different because you're not interacting with your body or cash. You're interacting with another person. Different game.
Yeah.
So base level is ownership. Second layer is respect or earned respect, which is both through the actions that we take and the interactions that we have with people. And then that third layer is connection, which is what I love. I mean, you asked about like the bow, going out, adventures. I believe that as men, we connect best, not when we're across from a kitchen table, but when we're out in the cold, hiking through the forest or on the resting mat, whatever, having a struggle together that we're side by side experiencing together. Then at the very top is expectations. And a lot of times as parents, we flip it where expectations get A, B, and C done, and we turn into a police officer. And they see us, and the brand that we create as a dad is, oh man, he's just telling me what to do, as opposed to everything that's underneath it. And it takes a lot to stack up ownership, respect, connection, positive interactions, adventures together, all that to have that space and authority to rise the expectation, to rise the culture in your home. So I know that was a little bit of a long-winded answer.
That was a great answer. I'm wondering about the first step. So you get coaching
yes.
with Mike, past guest that we've had on the podcast. Great guy. You get coaching with Mike. You've got your kid now 3 hours away who doesn't want to be around you, you know, yeah. or at least he doesn't want to be around you much. What yeah. was step one with coaching? What's step one? Was it something you said or did to begin to reopen the line of communication with your son?
Yes, great question. Really what it came down to is it's going to sound incredibly simple, but there's a lot of deeper work. Like it's literally the tip of the iceberg that's sticking out of the water. Sending him an Instagram reel of a like great football catch. Something that had nothing to do with the custody battle that was going on, because like all of this is going on. We're having a custody battle of where Charles is going to live between me and my ex, which ended up, you know, the result ended up being me being out here. I moved to Redmond where he was to split 50-50, and I got all the other terms that I was looking for if I moved. So, but it just started with something really small that had nothing to do with anything else important. Sometimes the things that we think are the least important and silly, like my 4-year-old, like Paw Patrol right now, for her, that's really important. So knowing the characters, and she asks for bedtime stories about Paw Patrol, I better be able to create something for her in that bedtime story that she thinks is cool because that's important to her. It's not important to me, but that the important thing is to connect with your kids at the level that they're looking for.
Meeting them where they are, I guess, right? I don't think that's overly yeah. simplistic. Sending them a reel, that's off topic. Because I think most of us try to figure out like the plan, the process. Okay, I'm going to schedule a lunch and I'm going to share this. And it's great for you, but it's for you. It's not for them, right? For them, all they want is...
yeah.
You know, do you care? So where he is on his phone all the time, probably on Instagram or TikTok or whatever it might be. So if he's on his phone at his mother's all the time, meet him where he is, meet him on the phone.
Yeah.
That makes a ton of sense. Okay.
Yeah.
I will come back to this. Flash forward. because you've had you've had other experiences as a father. So fill us in on the path forward from that point.
Oh, sure. So I guess probably the scariest thing was this. Everything happened real fast. Last, I guess, it'd be a summer ago now. So December 2021, January 2022, Charles moves. Fast forward to September 2022, we make the decision that we're going to move to Redmond. We don't know for sure how it's going to go. We don't know if Charles is going to say, great, there's a new parent plan. I'm going to follow this. Let's make it the best. Or if he's going to say, screw you guys. I don't care that you're here. I'm not going to follow this. We don't know. And he was turning 15. So he is a very strong-willed 15-year-old. So he's very much wants to accomplish what he wants to do. As he got here, he was struggling with some things. And I said, hey, you know, the one thing that I want to see you do, and he said that was important for him, is performing and having a clear mind. So let's get you into some type of physical activity. And that was kind of a standard when we were in Eugene, that every year he was doing one to two sports. And so he chose Muay Thai. I trained jiu-jitsu. The gym that I went to had Muay Thai. So we started going to Muay Thai a couple times a week together. And that really sparked something with him. He started to see change in his body. He gained about, like, the first 3 months, he went from 130 pounds. He's about 5'10", 5'11", 130 pounds to 150 pounds. So he gained like 20 pounds in just a couple months. And he's like, oh, this is, you know, and he started strength training. And it just started to snowball in a positive direction for him. And then with that, like we talked about with the connection, it kind of built us those bricks. Sometimes we think, oh man, if I just have this one amazing experience with my son or daughter, this one conversation that I should get, but it's a bricks of like, go to a Muay Thai class, another class, strength train together, go on a walk with the dog, like just slowly stacking these bricks, and all of a sudden you have a house.
Yeah, that's amazing. The dads that you work with, is their story similar? Disconnect with the kids. What is it that dads struggle with most? Is it exactly with what you struggled with, or is it something else?
Oh, great question. Every dad's a little different. I'll share this with you. I've had dads come to me where they've had sons, daughters who are adults who they're disconnected with, and it's a lot harder, but we can still make it. We've still made it happen every time, but there's a rebellion. So I'll tell you a little bit about box theory because I think it's so important. Box theory says, anytime we restrict somebody, if you think of, I'm just going to use this example. I had a client who had a teenage daughter and she got in trouble and said, okay, so you're going to have to be grounded this weekend. Oh, this sucks. Blah, 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 blah. Mouths off. Feels restricted. Okay, well, now you lose your phone. More restricted. What does she do? She pushes back. Literally, she's in a box. She pushes back against it, sneaks out the window. Mm. When I was a teacher, we're restricted. The kids are in the box all day. As soon as that bell rings, what's the first thing that happens, Jamie?
They run for the door.
Run for the door. We're out. We're free. So in movies like Braveheart, fight for freedom. Like anytime there is a restriction of freedom, it will be met with tremendous opposition, especially if you have strong-willed kids. So typically I work with dads who are very, very intelligent, love their kids, want what's best for their kids, committed to the process. And in that, just like I did, lost sight of, okay, wait, what is it that my kid wants? And over time, they may not see it. They trap them into a box and then they're like out pushing back against their leadership and they don't know why. Like, why isn't my teenage daughter talking to me? She just ignores me, gives me short answers, the eye rolls, wanting a better relationship, wanting a connection, and wanting to be able to impact their son or their daughter at the level where when they're 19, 20, they're going to come to them and say, hey, dad, what should I do here? As opposed to, dad, I can do this on my own. I can figure it out. Mm. I'm 19. I'm an adult now, which we all know. It's like, there's so much to learn. Yeah. I don't know if that answers your question.
It does. It does. I think about this a lot with my kids, 2 boys, 8 and 5, strong-willed. And what you said really resonated with me around meeting them where they are, especially my older one. I was sharing this with another guest that he loves to accomplish soccer, scores a bunch of goals, man. He's like dominating his league right now. It's crazy, averaging like 3 goals a game. And for whatever reason, my wife and I, when he's excited about scoring goals, we're afraid to almost validate that out of fear that if he doesn't score all the goals, that he doesn't see that the value is in the work, is in the process or whatever. So we say congrats, but almost in a butt way, kind of draw him back to like, hey, the important thing is that you worked hard, or that you know, you're with your team, whatever. And my eyes being open to the idea that like, hey, look, he's going to have his failures. He's going to go through what he's going to go through, but I got to meet him where he is right now. Where he is right now is crushing it. So be involved and be engaged and enrolled in him crushing it. When he's not crushing it, be there for that as he learns that, as opposed to trying to force a lesson. So that comes to mind. Is that, I don't know, does that resonate? Am I tapping into the leadership there, or am I parenting?
Great question. When you're in that space, I think, you know, a lot of it is, I'm always thinking about with my kids, what's the next step? What's the next lesson? What's the next evolution? So he's crushing it in soccer. How is he performing in practice? What's his effort like in practice?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, he loves it. He gets involved. He's running his butt off.
So my first instinct is, like you said, like, hey, as opposed to, like you said, celebrating this result, like, do you see all this work that you put in that created this result?
Yeah.
And you said he's 10 or 8?
8, yeah.
8, like he may, that's a jump for a lot of adults, so that he may or may not, you know, reach that. But I think it's important, like you said, Jamie, just to always think about what's the next level for him. So if he's crushing that, actually another coach that we both know, Aaron Velke, when he was on my podcast, he talked about putting people in position that were really successful where they had to fail. So that's what came to my mind when you told me your story about your son. Like, okay, when it's a good time, when it's the right space, maybe I need to make sure that he also, instead of like, yes, you scored, and I want to provide you another experience. What's your son's name?
Sebastian.
Sebastian. So Jamie, let me ask you this. What would an experience look like if you put him in a space where it was impossible to fail? I'll just give you the example that Aaron gave me, which was he had a client go with a set of rollerblades and just talk to random people in the street and ask if they could rollerblade in their basement.
Mm. That's impossible to fail?
Well, like to get a stranger to say, yes, come and rollerblade in my basement off the street. Just something silly. Like there's something that's very difficult to succeed. Like if you were to set Sebastian up with something like that, what would it look like?
Something very difficult to succeed with?
Yeah, if not impossible, where there's a very high chance that he's going to fail.
So this is funny that you say that. And I don't know if this plays into it, but when we practice, he and I together, there's something in me that says, don't make it easy on him. So my way of setting him up to fail is by sort of, I don't want to say like dominating him as a 40-something year old guy and he's 8 playing soccer, but I don't make it easy. I don't like, okay, here you go. You can go ahead and score. Like I'm pushing him. And in my mind, what I see on the field then is he's had to go up against a grown man, and he actually does, you know, he gets by me sometimes, you know, like legitimately with not like my max effort, but not my minimum effort either. He gets by me. He scores a goal. He has to kick it faster. He has to do things faster. So to me, practicing at a 40-year-old, a full-grown man's level against an 8-year-old is putting him in a position where it's impossible to succeed.
Beautiful.
So it's that's just what I'm working out with him. But yeah,
it's that next level. And I think that's actually tougher. The tougher scenario sometimes is like, okay, a kid doing great. How do I make sure they're humble than when they're failing? Because when you have that heartache and that pain of not succeeding, you want to get out of it.
Yeah, yeah, that is tough. That is
a hard question.
Thing. That is a hard thing too. The humility, building humility. I mean, look, anybody on this podcast, anybody listening to this podcast likely has their kids, if they do, in a position where they have no needs, no true needs anymore, right? Food, shelter, clothing, water, you know, whatever is taken care of. It's stepped up living down here in the Dominican because we have full-time staff cleaning, cooking, all of that, right? So that is a question that I always wonder, like, what is the, you know, I don't want my kids. I don't see the value in my kids growing up to know how to do the laundry. That's not who I'm raising to some extent. But at the same time, I don't want, you know, entitled, spoiled kids either. So how does a dad lead a kid to be humble, to have humility, even though they're growing up in a privileged environment, let's say? And privilege doesn't mean rich even, but just, anyone is good. Like your kids, like they don't need to do anything. You know what I mean? They got devices and phones. I mean, I see it here. There's kids that are 8 years old that clean our windshield at 2 p.m. or 1 p.m. on a school day because they can't go to school. They got to make money for their family. Like our kids are, no matter what, so far ahead, have so many advantages. So how do you teach humility?
Great question. I think it also comes down to grit. As you're asking me questions, I'm just like pulling things from these other awesome coaches that I know. Danny Diaz talks about just like going out on an adventure, going camping, like getting out in the wilderness. Even if it is true. Like if you want your kids to be like, we're privileged, but Jamie, you know the shit that you had to go through to get to that spot.
Yeah.
He doesn't. So I would find in my heart, I want to find ways where out in this scenario, money doesn't fucking matter. Wrestling mat doesn't matter. It's the work you put in.
Yeah.
If you're out in the woods hiking, if you're visiting a third world country and you've got everybody, here's your rice and little bit of shrimp or whatever you've got to eat. This is what you get for the day. That's a powerful opportunity, I believe, for a kid is to put them in a spot where the money doesn't matter anymore. It's about who you are and who you've built yourself to become. That's going to be the currency that matters. So I would say to that question, finding those situations
that makes
would be extremely valuable.
I like that. I like that a lot. You have a daughter now, correct?
I have two.
Two daughters now.
So I've got a 1-year-old and a 4.
1 and 4. So they're still young. Yeah. What are you learning might be, or what's your experience teaching you might be the difference leading as a dad to a boy versus leading as a dad for a girl?
I've heard both sides of this. I've heard, oh man, raising a boy is so much easier. Raising girls is so much easier. And maybe it's because I'm with my wife now. And so with Charles, I was really back and forth, different values. And Megan and I are pretty consistent. Girls are so fun though. Like as a dad, they're very affectionate, very emotional. And it fills that feminine energy and attention that they give me really fills me up. Actually, this is kind of a fast forward. One of the principles is going to be a bonus chapter in the book is don't treat boys and girls equally. In school, when I was a teacher, that was everybody's the same. Everybody's equal. I think as kids develop, they have their own strengths and weaknesses. And something I see in my daughters is a lot of caring and great memory, attention to detail. So I want to make sure they're in a position where they're able to really leverage those and leverage if there are chances. Like for my daughter, when she plays soccer, she loves connecting with the other kids. She actually could care less about the kids. She just runs around the field, right? It's her first season. When she started, she was 3. She runs around the field back and forth and she's smiling and maybe kicks the ball a couple times. And there are other kids that are just drive, score, goal. And she's like, I want to make sure all my friends get a sticker because I have all these extra stickers. So she's handing out the stickers. So as far as how I raise them differently, number one, I'll be more protective of my daughters. That's the number one difference. When Charles
tactically or just is it a natural instinct as a man?
It's the physical, I guess physical safety is more of a concern. So their ability to, for example, when Charles was in 6th grade, we would live 4 miles away from the school he was going to. 5th to 6th grade summer, I taught him how to ride a bike to get to school. I mean, he already knew how to ride a bike, but the directions and all that, you're going through this area, whatever, you're on a bike, you'll be fine. If my daughter was in 6th grade, I wouldn't do that. Not for 4 months, not in the same neighborhood going through the same areas that I did for Charles, because she's a girl, she's more vulnerable. Women are the vulnerable sex. And so I've got to be more mindful of that protection. On the other side of the coin, there might be opportunities where if she wants to go, it's tough because my daughters are so much younger. There's such a big age gap. Yeah. But if Maddie wanted to start a garden and needed supplies for it, I would be more likely to do that up front for her, knowing that she was committed to the process. As where Charles, I might be like, I need to push you to make sure this is, you're committed to the details and committed to the process and not going to have it just be something you do in the short term. And then I'm bored and I'm going to go to something else. So I think it's important to know our kids and what their strengths and weaknesses are. But I also believe we shouldn't just treat boys and girls the same in every circumstance. And I talk about, you know, as dads, we can get all this information and it's not ultimately not going to tell us what to do, but the information is going to tell us the move that we need to make, the best move that we can make as dads.
We're going to unpack the book here in a second. On that topic though, what do you say to the person who says you're propagating gender stereotypes, or you're saying women, the girl is vulnerable, so therefore she will align with that as an identity, that she's vulnerable. You say they're different. I agree with you. What is the argument to the objection of somebody that may say, hey, you know what? Why can't a girl ride a bike 4 miles? What do you mean she's vulnerable? What do you mean boy isn't? A six-year-old boy can, you know, fight off a stranger, but a girl can't? Like, what are you, crazy? What is the case that you would make to say that there's a difference in that respect, that vulnerability spot for women versus men?
I believe that there has been a very sad stripping of what makes us men and what makes us women, and celebrating those. And I saw this in school when I was a teacher, that like the feminine energy of being soft and emotional and caring and pouring into others and supportive, naturally, 80-20 principle. When I was in PE, I had that one girl that say, like, sorry, Sally, I'm not picking you. I want to win. I'm picking Damien because he's good at basketball.
Yeah.
90% of the girls be like, I'm going to pick Chloe because she's my friend. I don't want to hurt her feelings. It's just the natural when things go. Naturally, relationships are more important to women, and naturally, performance is more important to men. And the harmony of us being able to work together has not been celebrated enough. So I wouldn't say this in a space of restriction. I would say this in a space of celebration of man that wants to lift weights and train and build his own business, start a company, go out hunting with his friend, whatever that feeling of an expression of taking action and penetrating his day and challenging himself, to celebrate that, and also to celebrate what naturally makes women and feminine and nurturing. And this is this is a really good question, because I think there's a lot of issues going on right now in this country. And what is the threat, and why is it this division of we need to keep everybody the same? The sad thing is, when there's not a balance, how are we going to build? And we're teaching women to be more masculine and men to be more feminine. When we get into the home, there's not the harmony. There's not the leadership in the home from the man. And there's not the caring from the woman that we need to successfully provide a foundation for our kids. Yeah, I could go on for this for forever.
No. But something that struck a chord with me. I agree with you, man. I think I can only speak to masculinity because I'm a guy, and you know, guys tend to be masculine. So masculinity has become toxic masculinity. It's not like there's two different versions. I don't even know if there is truly a toxic man. I'm sure there is, but it's become like, that's all it is. Masculinity is toxic. And I think that you're seeing right now, to your point, I think you're seeing women calling men forward to be masculine, but a society that's telling us that masculinity is a bad thing, that it's a negative, that it's endangering in some way or harming men, you know, that they can't be vulnerable. I think masculinity includes vulnerability, the ability to be vulnerable. But what's interesting is the sort of, let's call it like the two sides of this argument, or the two-facedness of this argument. I've heard plenty of women
yes.
who will say that I'm a strong woman. I don't need a man. And then on the same time, at the same time, okay, you're going to go on a date. Who pays? Well, he does.
Mm.
Well, why? Why does he pay? Well, you know, it's what men should do. Like, but you just said you don't need him. So why should he not then feel like he can't be this masculine person? He can't have this masculine energy around you, because you're essentially saying that if he exercises that masculinity in a way that you don't like, that it's bad. But when he exercises that, or when he doesn't exercise that masculinity in a way that you expect him to, it's bad as well. How is he to win?
Yeah.
So I think there's, and that's not every woman. I'm sure some women would be like, I don't care if they, whatever. You get my point. There is a vilification of masculinity.
Yes.
That is hurting women, and it's hurting men. It's hurting our society. We see it now. Like, people are afraid to say what they feel. People are afraid to take a stand and say, that's what I think. And that's it. I don't care if you want to cancel me or whatever it may be. And I think that's all comes down to the demasculinization of our society and the attempt to masculinize women. But I don't think women really want to be masculinized. I'll go even further. I think that a woman's core energy without any conditioning would be more to nurture, would be more to, I want to take care of my children. I want to take care of my family. I want to be in my greatest feminine energy. And I think a man's true nature is, I want to provide. I want to bring food home, and that's it, right? Like, I think that that is the natural order of things. And we have gotten to a place where I don't think it's unhealthy necessarily to say, hey, look, a guy can also be a good dad and be loving and doting to his kids, where that may not be perceived as masculinity in the rawest sense of the word. And a woman could go out and get a job and be a captain of industry. I have CEOs of companies, go for it. And that doesn't take away from you being a woman. But to deny that woman's CEO has an instinct in her toward motherhood, or an instinct in her toward nurture, and to deny that man who's a stay-at-home dad, and that's great, has an instinct in him to kill somebody if they come near their kids in a way that's aggressive, or has that instinct in them to provide and put food on the table, I think that's just denying masculinity and femininity in its truest form. And that's the part where it bothers me. It's like, there's do and there's be, right? Go do whatever you want.
Right.
Who you are is you have a masculine or a feminine energy. That's it. That's how I look at it. So anyway, that's a rant of mine. I don't know if anything in there kind of open up a thought for you. I'll give you some space for that.
Yes. I really appreciate you sharing that, because as you mentioned in there, there's dads that aren't real loud. I talk to men every week that you would never expect their true feelings of what's happening in like the public schools, of how sexuality is being taught. And sexuality is a big umbrella. It's how we interact within our intersection. It's how we interact with our own sexual feelings. And it's huge, right? Like, I'm going to homeschool my kids. They're not making a noise about it. They're not, I'm homeschooling my kids. My neighbor across the street, he's like, my kids are four. We're just going to homeschool. And what concerns me, and I would want to share with all sides, is when we have this division for years, even back to the 60s and you know, with the MLK movement and bringing integration within the schools, like movies like Remember the Titans?
Yeah.
Bringing everybody together, like, hey, it doesn't matter what color you are. We get on that, you know, we put on the same color uniform and we're brothers. We've had different religions, different ethnicities, different political beliefs all together, and there's an opportunity for us to share and understand, this person may have a different view than me, but I'm going to like get to know him, and I see that, okay, yeah, we think differently, but he's still a person, he's still great. There's not this ill will, like I might hate what you're saying, but I don't hate you. And I feel like, sadly, we're getting a space where I hate what you're saying, therefore I hate you.
Yeah.
And what you represent, and we're at war between these two sides. And my concern is, with this movement spiraling and this greater division, this is getting deep.
Yeah, it's okay. This is good. This is an interesting topic to me. Go ahead.
What is being threatened, and a lot of the reason why I talk to these dads, like, I don't want my kids in that environment, is their kids' ability to one day grow up and have a family. They want their kids to continue their bloodline. That's like kind of the selfish. I want kids to continue, but I want my kids. I know they don't see right now when they're 13, 14, the joy of creating a family and like going through life with a team and having children and having an, that life, even for me, not yet, but once Charles is 20, 24 years old, having an adult child and what that experience looks like, there, some of the decisions that are being made or kids are making is cutting off their ability to reproduce and have a family in the future, which is a very innate to the core of what we are as humans, whether you're on the feminine or the masculine, we are meant to, and I think one of the most powerful things for us as humans is to be able to blend together and stay as a family. There aren't, I mean, I can't speak to orcas and all that, but I know there aren't a lot of animals that have a family unit that stay together for as long as humans. I think it's one of the most beautiful gifts that we have of being humans on this earth.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. I want to talk about the book here, but on this topic, the I've called it, and people call it grooming, that's happening in schools. The, like you said, we've talked about the demasculinization, the defeminization, and or the blend of the two. If you are against the idea that a teacher or administrator should have a conversation with your kids regarding their sexuality, whatever that is, you are not having a debate with somebody about that idea. You're a transphobe. You're a homophobe.
Right.
To your point. It's not the idea and the ideology that you take exception to. The human being becomes something. I am a transphobe. And look, are there situations where somebody has, you know, they're gay, they're homosexual, they are attracted to men or attracted to women of the same, attracted to somebody of the same sex, and sharing that with their parents, they feel would be dangerous? Of course. Go talk to somebody that you trust. Go talk to a teacher, an administrator, and so on and so forth. I'm perfectly down with that. I believe and hope that I'm building, and you are, as a leader, as a dad, building the types of communication lines with my kids that if and when they have that, not if and when, if or when they have that sense, or, you know, if they're going to go through puberty and they don't want to, and they say, oh, I want to be a girl, or I want to be a boy, or whatever, which happens at puberty sometimes, right? Like, that's just a confusing time for kids, that they come talk to me. So the issue I have is when a school system, an administrator, a teacher tries to say, I'm going to put this all in one box. Any kid that says to me what they feel, I own that. Parent can't hear about it. The law will be that I take it, I got it, and I cannot tell the parents about it. It's between me and that child. That child's parent doesn't get access to it. Some, again, would say, oh, but if that kid doesn't feel safe at home, it's like, then that kid can make the decision who they talk to. But don't make the rule that, hey, everyone, it's okay to be a girl, it's okay to be a boy. Let me teach you this in school. Teach my kid math. Teach them English.
Yeah.
Teach them, you know, what Machiavelli did in whatever time that he did it, right? Like, teach them that. But don't teach my kids this topic, because I want to own that. Maybe there are some kids that the school should own it, but I want to own that discussion point. So it is an interesting thing where stepping up and saying that now on this podcast is me stepping into my masculine energy. It's fully being masculine. It's saying, this is where I stand. You don't like it? Fuck off. But but the vilification that comes with it, and I see it. I get the comments. I get this, that, and the other. You know, you're a homophobe. Even moving down here, you're a colonizer. Never mind who I am or what I'm about or who I am individually. Like, you're in a bucket, and that's what you are. And that is where a lot of men, I feel, are feeling the draw to demasculinize, if you will, because they're being vilified for how they stand up or what they stand up for, no matter what that means. Is there hate? Of course there's hate. But at the same time, most people just have a stand, a feeling on what they want, what they believe, and they're not allowed to have it. So says, you know, society. That's the part that bothers me.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's go into the book.
Why write
the book? And what are some of the big principles you want to make sure you highlight about the book in this episode? The key to life, it isn't money. It's happiness. And when you measure how happy you are, you actually become even more happy. Our friends at GoBundance, the Tribe of Millionaires, use a very specific tool to measure their happiness. It's called the Life Happiness Index, and you can have it too. Go over to GoBundance.com/LHI and take your Life Happiness Index assessment. You'll rate yourself in multiple categories on exactly how happy you are and get a custom output for you specifically that you can use in developing whatever goals you have for your life. GoBundance is the tribe of healthy, wealthy, generous people who choose to live epic lives. And the tool GoBundance members use at the base of all of that is the Life Happiness Index. Get out there and grab life big.
This book is really, as we've talked before we hit record, really important to me. I felt like I kept working with these dads and they get a couple weeks in and they're like, wow, like this like relationship's changing tremendously already. Like, okay, I want to get this message out to more dads. I want to get this system out to more dads that are willing to do the work, that are wanting to take a different route, that are going through the same challenge that I did. And the book is set up in really two sections. The first section is going to cover a lot of the challenges that we face and how things have changed, where we've come from as masculine men and leaders, and understanding the, well, we've talked a lot in this episode about what is the natural way, what is our natural, and to be honest, that's what's a lot of fun for us as men. What is organic for us? And then what are the challenges that our kids are facing and really bringing that to light, really highlighting it before we get into the work. The second section of the book is the Dads Who Lead Pyramid. That's what we talked about. Ownership, earned respect, connection, and expectation. And so I really want this book to feel like a ladder. Each chapter is building on itself, building another step up to creating great expectations, but also great connections, great relationships, and great impact that dads can have with their kids. Because I do believe in the world that we're growing up in, the dad, especially if you're a dad listening to this, you've had success in your life. You know what it takes to get there. And we ultimately just want for our kids to be able to lean into us when they're 18, 19, 20 years old and not run away. And that's one of the big reasons I wrote this book, is I want to help dads create a relationship with their kids that's one of leadership and not one of, I'm going to tell you what to fucking do, so that our kids can lean into us and come to us for guidance and counsel as they're making big decisions and making decisions for themselves, because those decisions, they're going to end up making it on their own, whether it's with our advice, against our advice, or indifferent. And the better position we can put ourselves in for as dads for those moments, the better.
Love it, man. Book comes out in 2024. Where can folks go to pre-order it right now and get some exposure to all the work that you're doing with Dads Who Lead?
Absolutely. So you can go to dadswholead.com. There's a couple of opportunities. If you're just like, man, I just want to learn more about Dads Who Lead, there's a free leadership quiz, and you can understand more about your natural leadership style and your strengths and weaknesses as a dad, because we didn't really go into it in this episode, but we all have, you know, a mistake that one dad make of being too nurturing and too involved with his kids could be the opposite mistake of somebody who's just more focused on himself. So there's a balance that we've got to find. And that's kind of what the quiz is about. If you want to order the book, you can also go to dadswholead.com, go to the Dads Who Lead shop, and then you'll see an opportunity there to pre-order. And any support for the movement is much appreciated. And we've got some extra bonuses that I can offer for your listeners as well.
I like bonuses. Good stuff, man. I appreciate you. Thanks for coming on, talking through all of this. This was a fun discussion, man. I thank you, and I'll see you in Emerge, man. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Jamie.